Man, the whole nation is shaking and quaking over this Donald Trump's executive order on the refugees. We'll sort it out today.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
So what are we to make of our president's executive order temporarily banning refugees from seven countries from entering America, giving preference to Christian refugees who will be people of minority status in the Muslim countries in which they live? A firestorm of controversy over this. Do we have guidelines from Scripture? Does the Torah tell us explicitly to care for the foreigners, or does the Torah tell us to kill the hostile foreigners? How do we apply that to today? This is Michael Brown. You're listening to The Line of Fire. Oh, I've got a lot of thoughts on this. I've written about it. I want to talk with you about it. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Is this another example of media hysteria? The media going crazy over this. Political leaders calling for the president's impeachment. People calling for his assassination. Protests at airports and in the streets of America. Is this driven by Muslim radicals trying to stir up more controversy in America? Is this driven by Americans being compassionate for those in need around the world? Is this just a reaction against Donald Trump? What is it? And is it simply a matter of him doing what he said he would do, except at a much lesser level? This is not a Muslim ban. As much as the media is reporting it as such, it is not a Muslim ban. It is a temporary halt in refugees coming from seven countries. There are many other Muslim-majority countries in which refugees come in the same way. And it's a stepping back from what some of what Donald Trump spoke about during his campaign when he did speak about a Muslim ban for refugees. No, this is actually a temporary halt in refugees from seven countries so that more extreme vetting processes can be set in motion. And I believe extreme vetting is good and helpful. Keep the bad guys out and let the legitimate ones in need come in. Shouldn't we do that? Don't we have the responsibility? But either way, whether you like the order or not, the way it was executed, there was a lot of confusion, and it could have been executed better, and that gave further fuel to the critics of this administration. But a lot of hysteria, a lot of shaking, a lot of criticism, a lot of concern. Congressman Schumer talking about Statue of Liberty, shedding tears, and even shedding tears himself at a news conference. Prime Minister Trudeau in Canada saying, hey, we're going to let the refugees in here. Our doors are open. A talk with Saudi Arabia about safe spaces there for refugees. This is one of the Trump strategies, to have safe spaces for refugees in other parts of the Muslim world. We'll talk about all of that, but what's your take? What's your take? 866-34-TRUTH. The protest around America, is this a legitimate response from compassionate Americans who are concerned with an un-Christian, even anti-Christian move by the White House? Is it just the result of misreporting by the media? Is it just backlash against Donald Trump? Whatever he does, people are going to flip out. If he does anything he promised, people are going to flip out. How do we sort this out as believers? Are some evangelicals who voted for Trump too quick to defend him no matter what? These are questions we want to discuss on the broadcast today. I got a call from a pastor today, and he was thanking me for the articles I write. And he says, look, when it came to political issues, he says, you're not never Trump. You're not always for Trump. So hopefully we can sort this thing out today on the air without being partisan. In other words, let's not look at this through the lens of being Democratic or Republican or white or black or Hispanic or Asian or even Christian or Muslim. Let's look at this through sane, clear, thinking eyes in the most unbiased way we can. Can we do that? What's your take? 866-34-TRUTH. Are you glad the president's done what he has done?
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for being part of the broadcast. We're talking about the president's executive order. Is he simply doing what he promised to do? Is he simply setting things in motion as quickly as possible? Is this a way to provoke more terror attacks against the United States here and citizens abroad? Is this wise? Is this the kind of thing that's going to make America stronger? Does it go in the opposite direction of compassion? Or is there a place for compassion and wisdom at one and the same time? 866-348-7884. You can read my article on this about five things that are bothering me concerning the response to the president's executive order on refugees. One of the biggest issues is the way it was implemented. There was confusion. People with green cards who had legitimate access to come back into our country were momentarily, meaning not for days, but for hours, prevented from coming into the country. I read one report about a newborn and an 18-month-old who are citizens of America being stopped from coming in. They were detained at Chicago's O'Hare Airport. The implementation caused further controversy, but the real issue is the executive order itself. Is this a righteous thing? Is this a good thing? 866-34-TRUTH. And all of the outrage over it. You mean to tell me that suddenly millions of Americans, political leaders, are suddenly deeply concerned about the status of a Muslim refugee from Libya or Yemen? It's one thing if suddenly there was a ban on Hispanic immigrants or something like that, and you've got all of those that have come in from Mexico into our country, and the family members can't get in, and so on. And that would be one thing. We're talking about Muslims. We're talking about roughly 1% of the country. I'm not saying they don't deserve our compassion when they're legitimate refugees. That's not my issue. But you're talking about a tiny percentage of the nation, and yet the sudden outburst of sympathy, support, concern. Where was that concern when hundreds of thousands of Christians were being slaughtered and exiled and sold into slavery and displaced over the last decade plus in the Middle East? Where were the tears then? So a lot of this is bothering me in terms of the responses. And here, I mean, you've got people posting that they want to see Donald Trump assassinated. A gentleman who's been a guest on the radio show here before, lives in Canada, a Christian professor who's had many, many issues with Donald Trump for many reasons. He posted, "I've seen enough. My prayer tonight is that Donald Trump fails, is impeached and thrown out of office. This man is an antichrist." Another Christian leader bills himself as a formerly fundamentalist. He says, "If you wondered if it were possible to follow Jesus and support Trump, that question should be loudly answered for you by now." New York Times branded Trump's order a cowardly and dangerous act of unrighteousness. And on the flip side, right-wing sites like Breitbart.com have headlines declaring Terror-Tied Care, that's the Council on American Islamic Relations, says that CARE is promoting protests and lawsuits as Trump protects the nation. They're causing chaos, promoting protests and lawsuits as Trump protects the nation. In other words, the Muslim activists are using this to have an uprising against Trump and spark these protests. And for the most part, that's where they're coming from. On Twitter, I asked the question, is Trump's executive order on the refugees fundamentally unchristian, or is it being misreported by the media or something else? Other, third choice, got 10%. Those who said that the executive order is anti-Christian were only 16%. 74% said misreported by the media. And then, also within the last 24 hours, there's a mass shooting at a mosque in Quebec. And the suspects now involved are named as Alexandre Bissonnette and Mohamed Khadir, with speculation that the first gentleman was a convert to Islam, and that this was a Muslim-Muslim battle. In other words, that there was one group of Muslims attacking another group of Muslims as heretics. Apparently, this is what Robert Spencer speculates in Jihad Watch. But sadly, there was a fake report on Twitter, a fake Reuters news account, that said police said two suspects were in custody after the attack. They were identified as white supremacists, gives their name. This is not the first time the mosque has suffered from a hate crime. In July, a pig's head was left at the mosque. That's totally false. That is 100% false. That was a false news feed that the Daily Beast then picked up and thought was a true story and ran it, saying that white supremacists attacked the mosque, as if this was now an offshoot of people standing with Donald Trump, who are white supremacists who go north of the border or live north of the border and attack a mosque in Quebec. This is 100% fake news. It was a fake Twitter feed that Daily Beast mistakenly went for. That can happen. These things can be deceiving, and if you don't check your sources carefully, you can end up posting something totally false. So how do we respond to this as believers? Going to go to the phones momentarily, but I wrote about this last year, actually 2015 now, four reflections on the Syrian refugee crisis. Now, there's a temporary halt put on Syrian refugees, but the president has noted that it's very hard for Christians to get into the country, Christian refugees. And according to the executive order, if you have a minority religious status in a country where you're being persecuted, you'll have preference as a refugee. So that would give Christians preference. That would give a group like Yazidis in Iraq, that would give them preference. And rightly so, because they have less options. They have less places to go. So I noted these four points back in November of 2015. One, the government should major on security. The church should major on compassion. So let the government do what it needs to do to secure our borders. Let the church work with different organizations that are helping sponsor refugees or get sponsors for refugees, and let us do our best to incorporate them into our communities and into our homes. There are faith-based organizations that we can work with to sponsor refugees. Second, I said priority should be given to Christian refugees. Priority should be given to Christian refugees. And I'll explain why a little bit later in the broadcast. Third, Muslim nations must step up their sponsorship of Muslim refugees. Four, we must guard our hearts against unchristlike attitudes. And we want to love our enemies and pray for them all at the same time, standing strong with wisdom for security. All right, I'm going to expand on those. I'm going to tell you some of the things bothering me about the responses to the president's executive order. And the little I've read about the legality of it, it should be able to stand. I know one thing was shot down temporarily, but it should be able to stand. Oh, before I go to the phones, if you have an Android phone, Apple coming very, very soon, hopefully any day. If you have an Android phone, all right? If you have an Android phone, so any of the Samsung, well, just about everything that is not, virtually everything that is not an Apple phone. But if you have an Android phone, you can now get the Ask Dr. Brown app. Yeah, right on your cell phone, right on your tablet, you'll be able to get all of our latest articles, all of our latest videos. You'll be able to listen to the Line of Fire right on your phone. You want to call, boom, you just press the button to call. You want to check out latest books, other things. It's all there. ASKDR Brown. So go to the App Store. As soon as you have a break, tell your friends, all right? Let's get this to millions of people. Ask Dr. Brown, ASKDR Brown. The app is now available at long last. Take advantage of it. Enjoy it. And again, anywhere you are in America, you want to listen to the broadcast between 2 and 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, all 2 hours, boom, just click on it right on your cell phone and listen along. We are thrilled to finally make this available. All right, we go to the phones. Let's start with Al in Boston. Welcome, sir, to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. I really enjoyed your show. I wanted to just mention that I'm pretty much in line with what you've been saying. And the only thing I think with what happened was I think he kind of rolled it out too quickly. He should have probably, done some legal work on it and maybe, found those roadblocks ahead of time. But, fundamentally, this is something that needs to be done. You need to be able to apply a filter and find out, who could possibly cause damage to the United States. You come here with as a privilege, and you hope that all are coming here, with good intentions. But sometimes that's not the case, and you need to be able to have your security, all your borders protected. Other countries protect their borders, and there should be no reason why we can't protect our borders. And you need to be able to do something, you know, maybe a modification in what was done. And there's fear in this country, and there's fear of having uncontrolled situations like that happen. So you really
look Al, at what's happened in Europe. We look at what's happened in Germany and France and Sweden and other countries, and say, okay, there's got to be a better way to approach this. So yes, there could have been better ways to roll this out or make sure that proper agencies were better prepared to avoid some of the confusion. But is this an extreme anti-Christian measure, or is it simply governmental wisdom in an unusual time in history? We'll be right back.
It's fire we want, for fire we please.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
This is what President Trump tweeted out or issued in a statement yesterday in response to the responses to his executive order. Quote, America is a proud nation of immigrants, and we will continue to show compassion to those fleeing oppression, but we will do so while protecting our own citizens and border. America has all been the land of the free and home of the brave. We will keep it free and keep it safe, as the media knows but refuses to say. My policy is similar to what President Obama did in 2011 when he banned visas for refugees from Iraq for 6 months. The seven countries named in the executive order are the same countries previously identified by the Obama administration as sources of terror. To be clear, this is not a Muslim ban, as the media is falsely reporting. This is not about religion. This is about terror and keeping our country safe. There are over 40 different countries worldwide that are majority Muslim that are not affected by this order. We will again be issuing visas to all countries once we are sure we have reviewed and implemented the most secure policies over the next 90 days. I have tremendous feeling for the people involved in this horrific humanitarian crisis in Syria. My first priority will always be to protect and serve our country, but as president, I'll always find ways to help all those who are suffering. Now, that statement reads great to me. You may think, well, that's not accurate, that's not true. You might say, yeah, that's why we voted for Donald Trump. Either way, what we have to do as believers is be sure that we do not let our emotions get inflamed, that we do not just have anti-Muslim sentiments, as if your Muslim neighbor you've known for 20 years is suddenly going to try to blow up your house. On the other hand, we don't want to be naive and disregard the reality that radical Islamic terrorism is spreading around the world, and it can easily radicalize others, which is why we need to combat the ideology and expose the wrongness of it. We need help from Muslim friends to do that. And as for helping Christian refugees, we're a majority Christian nation. There are majority Muslim nations all over the world where the refugees, the Muslim refugees, have a better chance of making it. You have the same religion, especially if it's the Middle East, you have the same language, Arabic. You have very similar cultures. Wouldn't it make sense for those countries to lead the way in sponsoring Muslim refugees and for Christian majority countries to lead the way in sponsoring Christian refugees? Wouldn't that make sense? And on the church end, it's not unchristian to do this. It says in Galatians 6, we should do good to everyone, especially to those of the household of faith. In other words, you do take care of your family first. You're expected to do that. When you go to work and get a paycheck, you pay for your family's groceries first, rather than leaving your family starving and trying to pay for the groceries of everyone else in the neighborhood that has a need. These are just scriptural principles and common sense principles as well. So yes, we want to help everyone. We want to help all legitimate refugees that we're able to and that our nation has the ability to assimilate. Absolutely, of course, regardless of their religion. We don't have a religion test. But if you are an extreme minority in another country, adding to your persecution and making your refugee status all the more difficult, then by all means, we should prioritize that. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Ralph in Staten Island. Thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Great, God bless you. Enjoy your show. I'm a Christian, and you know, I just wonder, you know, when did we become so Muslim phobic, I think about a song that says, "We didn't start the fire." And I also think that, you know, we can't just allow the fire to go unchecked. You know, I, as a family man, as a husband, as an American citizen, it's a fine line that we walk, in my opinion, as a Christian man. And yeah, the government is supposed to take care of situations like this, in my opinion. And as a Christian, you know, my job is to get on my knees and pray and to understand that I have to trust in God.
I just got a question, you know, though. Who said anything about being Muslim phobic? That's what I don't get. We have, as the president said, there are 40 majority Muslim countries where people can enter America without hindrance, just go through the normal process. And there are 7 that have previously been identified as high breeding grounds of terrorism, like Iraq and like Libya and like Yemen. And there's just a temporary halt put on that so that we can do better vetting of those coming in. So I don't know that we're becoming Muslim phobic. My feelings of Islam have been the same for decades. I recognize there are many sincere, devoted Muslims, and I recognize that they're radical Muslims who are terrorists. So I don't know that that's changed.
I recognize all that as well, and I use the term Muslim phobic because that's my sense of it all. We're becoming really sensitive in light of, you know, all of the things that have occurred because of the minority of terrorists or extremists, as you call them, and the acts that they have perpetrated upon society.
So we're just reacting.
We're hypersensitive, if that's a better
word. We're overreacting against all Muslims. Yeah, I don't see this executive order as doing that. But culturally, yeah, I think that's true. I think that there is an overreaction in many ways. Look, you live in Staten Island. I don't know if you remember this, but right after 9/11, there was a Sikh. So this is a man from India, non-Muslim, wearing a turban. And somebody killed him, thinking he was a Muslim, thinking they were retaliating for 9/11. So yeah, that can happen. And we can caricature all Muslims negatively. And right. The problem is, though, when the media then gives its false report and calls this a Muslim ban, now it further inflames emotions. But yeah, Ralph, I agree. We have to be careful that we don't fall into that mentality and treat Muslim neighbors and friends that have been here for years and that love being an American, appreciate our freedoms, treat them as if they're Osama bin Laden or something like that. Hey, thank you, sir, for weighing in. Much appreciated. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Lisette in Charlotte, North Carolina. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, how are you, Dr. Brown?
Doing well, thank you.
Well, my comment is pretty simple. You know, just like people do not like to live, you know, next to like a pedophile, you know, or somebody that robs people, shouldn't we have the same vetting process for anybody that wants to come live in our country? What is wrong about wanting to take our time to get to know those who come into our country for the safety and security of ourselves, our children? What is wrong with that?
Yeah,
if our president decides to take the time and be meticulous and careful about who comes in our country, we should be supporting. And let me stop for a second. I did not vote for Trump, so let me start by that. But still, you have to look at the reason behind the executive action. And I also, in part, blame the government for not expressing the process, the immigration process for people to come on in. If it would have been more public, that religion or religious persecution, it is one of the items that...
Hey, Lisette, I'm sorry to cut you off. We've got a break here. But look, go across the border to Mexico just to make a trip. Go across the border to Canada just to make a short trip and see what you get asked. Can we do a better job of vetting? Sure, we should.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution.
Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
And let me throw out this Christian perspective cue, then go back to the phones. A lot of people quote the words of Jesus from Matthew 25:31-46, where he talks about on the day of judgment that this is on a national level, separating the sheep from the goats. And he'll say to one, I was naked in prison and you fed me and you clothed me and you cared for me. And they'll say, when did we do it for you? And he said, when you did it for one of the least of these, my brethren, you did it for me. And then to the others, you didn't do this for me. And they said, when didn't we do it for you? Well, you didn't do it for the least of my brethren. You didn't do it for me. Those verses really shaped a church I was part of in the late 70s, early 80s, where we all took Vietnamese refugees into our home and then helped with Ethiopian refugees that were in a crisis. And we opened our homes and for years lived with refugees and sponsored them and cared for them. They became part of our families. It was a very important experience in our lives. And I believe made a great impact on those that were sponsored and that we were able to help many coming out of great, great suffering. So those verses have played a role in my own life over the years as well. But if you think of it, persecuted Christians in a country like Syria really do qualify as the least of these. They are a minority in their nation. They are surrounded by warring Islamic factions. They are the one that doesn't really have solidarity with either side. And even in refugee camps, they are often not safe. So they're the least likely to get help. And there's been a genocide of Christians in the Middle East. So based on that, shouldn't we prioritize Christian refugees? And similarly, where you might have a Muslim minority, maybe a Shiite minority in a Sunni country or a Sunni minority in a Shiite country, shouldn't the other Muslim nations of like faith do their best to help sponsor those refugees? I mean, doesn't that make sense? 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Ibrahim. All right. I wanted to go to Ibrahim in Georgia, Georgetown, Massachusetts, just because I thought that he might be of Muslim background. Wanted to bump him up on the phones here. It didn't work. All right, we go to Tim in Union City, New Jersey. Thanks, sir, for calling the line of fire.
Hi, how are you? It's just been a fascinating discussion listening to it.
Thank you.
But I have to tell you, I grew up in Manhattan. I'm a Black American, middle-aged guy, you know, poet, you know, creative type. And I grew up in Manhattan. I grew up with Donald Trump. He's like a neighbor of mine. So I've known the guy my entire life, you know, just at Trump Tower, him, Ivanka, the whole gang, you know. And I grew up around the UN. I grew up amongst minorities from every part of the world. This is the center of Manhattan, right? The Upper East Side, whatever have you. And I can tell you, I agree with Trump 100%. He's doing the right thing, stopping these guys from coming in. But I disagree with you on, and I am a Christian. I'm born again, and I'm a happy guy. I love Jesus. I've hated Muslims my entire life. That's not homophobic. That's with 9/11, the storekeepers that discriminated against me as a Black kid growing up, Muslim cab drivers, everyone I've met has sucked, okay? They put a mosque on 96th Street, 3rd Avenue, right in the middle of my neighborhood. They came in their burqas and whatever have you, and mumbling that jihadi crap, the Hawapi stuff from Saudi Arabia. So I have no love for the Muslim community, the Muslim people, or Muslim religion, okay? That's not a racist thing. That's a personal
animosity. All right, well, Tim, let's put
my experience.
Let's put Islam to the side. Is that a Christ-like attitude that you have?
I believe in Jesus. I believe Muslims didn't exist in the time of Christ. If there were Muslims during the time of Christ, he would have hated them.
He would have hated them.
They would have been after him, just like they're after everybody else. Okay, I don't even know what a Yazidi is.
So did he hate the Romans that were murderous? Did he hate the idol worshippers?
What is Caesar? What are you going to give unto Allah? What is Allah's? What is that?
No. I'm just asking about people, Tim. I'm asking about people. Did he hate the Romans? Did he hate the idol worshipping pagans? Did he hate those people?
Yeah,
see, that's the difference, Tim. You can despise Islam. You can feel you need to protect yourself against someone who's dangerous. But if you have the attitude of Christ, Jesus died. Jesus died for the salvation of those Muslims that you hate.
God of light, hear our cry.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. Well, what do you think of that? What do you think of a caller saying that he's had bad experiences with Muslims, and since 9/11, seeing what Muslims have done and coming into his community and setting up mosques and wearing burqas, and he hates them, thinks Jesus would hate them also? How do you respond to that? Again, to be categorically clear, Jesus laid down his life to save Muslims, and our heart should be one of unconditional love for all people, including Muslims, many of whom are very devoted, simply deeply deceived in their faith. At the same time, we use wisdom when it comes to security, when it comes to anything else. You may live in a neighborhood that's a bit of a dangerous neighborhood. You pray for your neighbors. If one of them had a need, you try to meet that need, but you keep your doors locked at night because you're using wisdom, or you have double bolt lock, you have a security system. That's not lack of love, that's wisdom. And then to conflate all Muslims with the minority who are terrorists is to do them a disservice and fail to walk in Christ-like love. 866-348-7884. It's one thing for us to be stupid, naive. It's another thing for us to be wise. Let's go to Lewis in New Haven, Connecticut. Welcome, sir, to The Line of Fire.
God bless, Dr. Brown. How are you?
Doing well, thank you.
Pretty difficult subject here, but I mean, I'm just going to try to go through it look at it biblically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, God has always taught us, you know, to love this, to hate the sin, but love the sinner. Which at this point, I mean, we understand that, all right, the Muslim faith is a deceived faith. And since the beginning of time, God has always taught us that we are not to mix with who isn't and isn't a man of God or is the same religion. Because the mixture, God is a jealous God, and he doesn't allow other gods before him. So that's where I think the difficult part here is, because we all understand that a Muslim religion is a false religion, isn't a true religion. So,
yeah, so how does that work, since our nation is open to people of all faiths and non-faiths? How does that work in terms of refugee status? In other words, isn't the real issue simply, do you want to take refuge in our country, and are you willing to uphold the laws and values of our country? I mean, that would
exactly
be the real question, right?
Right. Well, that's just it. Even you know, when Israel would win other countries, when they would take the other people in, they would have to, revert from whatever religion or whatever God they worship, and had to convert to serving the one and only Jehovah God. So basically, I think that's where we're at right now. You know, the Muslim religion is going to have its time after the rapture. But for now, I think what we have to do is to take in as many Christians, refugees, as we can, and try to bring them here, because like you said, this is where Christian religion is big. Muslims, if they feel threatened, then they can go somewhere where they can feel like they're comfortable in their religion. But yeah, I think it's correct, because we have to take in our Christians, protect them in here in America, where it's Christian-based.
So just as we're a majority Christian nation, even though if we've departed many ways from our roots, we're still a majority Christian nation by far, far. And Muslims are 1% of the population. So if a genuinely needy refugee, in other words, someone that needs to take refuge in another country, needs to escape from the country that they're in, because the vast majority want to stay where they are. If the country was not in upheaval, I mean, who wants to leave their native country if the country's not in upheaval? It's only a minority of people that will want to go somewhere else, have to learn a new language and culture and everything else. For the most part, you know, obviously America has so much promise and people want to come to our country, but I'm just saying, if all things were even and equal, people would rather stay where they are. But if there's a legitimate need and we can assimilate Muslims into our culture and they're happy to live among us and they're not trying to undermine our culture or establish their own laws that would overturn ours, well, great. But yes, let us give priority to Christian refugees. Again, for many reasons, both biblical and practical, it makes sense. 866-34-TRUTH. Let us go to Sharon in Virginia. You are on the line of fire. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Oh, let me cut this down. Hold on a second. Okay. Now, is that good? Are you getting feedback?
No, I can hear you. That's good.
Okay. Well, I want to respond. I understand that there are seven countries or nations that have been singled out by Mr. Trump. And I just wanted to know why there are not others. Why were those chosen? Because the 15 or so terrorists from 9/11 didn't come from any of those countries. And I would think
Saudi Arabia.
That would be, pardon me?
Yes, Saudi Arabia. And it's a problem. So in terms of how the countries were picked, Libya, Syria, Iraq, Iran, Sudan, and Yemen, these were initially identified, looking at a CNN article on this, as countries of concern under the Obama administration. So this is kind of following through on concepts that were developed under the Obama administration, but our relationship to Saudi Arabia remains problematic in that terrorists came from Saudi Arabia from 9/11.
Exactly. Well, my answer to that is, why all of a sudden does Mr. Trump, and I have a hard time calling him Mr. Trump, why all of a sudden is he going to follow what the example that President Obama set? He's not following anything else. He's destroying everything else that he's done. So why this? Is it because he has interest in those other countries, financial interest?
No, I don't think
countries?
So. I think this is... These are countries that run on the top of a number of people's lists. And in other words, this is nothing new here. He's not trying to recreate the wheel here because this has already been in place. But look, George Bush had close relations with the Saudi royal family. Did that make it problematic for our security? Did we not look at things properly? It could well be. I don't think. That it has to do with financial interest. I think it has to do with security experts have identified these countries. They still agree. In other words, you don't have to differ with everything that the previous administrations did. There were things that President Bush did that President Obama continued and others that he didn't. I think you have to ask wider questions, though, in terms of our relationship to Saudi Arabia, although from what we are told, what I've read, he's in conversations with Saudi Arabia about setting up safe spaces for Muslim refugees. But hey, Sharon, your questions are perfectly legit. I have no problem with you asking them. Let's ask away. I have no problem with that.
Okay. Well, I just think that 99% of the things that the previous administration had in place, they're bent on destroying. So.
Just think about what you said, though. 99%. If that was the case, America wouldn't be America anymore. It's rather some of the more radical policies of President Obama that were hotly opposed the whole way through, like the Affordable Care Act, so-called Obamacare, and the radical liberal direction the country was going. Those things are being opposed. But otherwise, American life is continuing as American life. But Sharon, perfectly fine for you to raise the questions. I appreciate it, and I understand your very mixed feelings towards our president. No argument with you for raising the questions. Fair enough. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Teresa in Virginia. Welcome to the line of fire.
Hi. This wasn't my original comment, but I did want to comment on the gentleman that called with the hatred toward the Muslims.
Yes.
And I think, that's something that I kind of stumble with. So I think perhaps where he might really be coming from is helpless anger. And I think helpless anger is probably the worst anger. We got people setting up mosques, taking over towns, and it feels like they're taking over so much of our country instead of just being a part of our country. I don't have that where I live. I have no problem, you know, when I see Muslims mix with Muslims, but it probably would affect me a lot differently if all of a sudden they were setting up mosques in my town and I felt like they were taking over my town. I might really struggle more like that gentleman does, even though he is wrong in his walk with God in that aspect biblically. And I think all of us as Christians to remember God already knew all this. He's got it. And if he puts us in our path, isn't it our job?
What we've got to do, what we've got to do just to jump in is we've got to break here. Thanks for being so honest about your feelings. What we've got to do is determine that we're going to walk in love towards everyone. We can use wisdom as far as security and what's happening in our towns.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Let me answer a question that was just sent my way. How are Muslims taking over some neighborhoods in America? Well, go to a place like Dearborn, Michigan. We have a large percentage of Muslims. And where you have enough Muslims in a certain city or area, obviously, the mosques will be very prominent. The prayer call coming from the mosque will be heard far and wide. You may have some noise restrictions in certain places, but otherwise, that's going to be the case. You will have certain, well, let's just say that if you came in with a Christian message in the midst of one of these gatherings, you'd be less than welcome, even though it's your perfect freedom of speech, maybe to hand out Christian flyers at some community event. And there are parts of America where there's a strong enough Muslim community that in their own community, they'll use their own law. They'll use Sharia law within their own community. I don't mean to be beheading people, you know, beheading adulterers or things like that. Now, look, you can go to a religious Jewish area and all the religious Jews will live together in a certain area and they'll have their rabbinical courts and they'll do their best not go to the secular courts. And if you know some lady came walking down the street in a bikini, she'd hardly be welcome there. These things happen. The question is it more sinister if it's Muslim or is it just like a religious Jewish takeover of an area? It's just questions to ask. 866-348-7884. Let's go to Julio. We won't go to Julio. We'll go to Ken in Rockland, Massachusetts. Thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
So I've been listening to the program, and the last woman who was on there, she was having some questions on why some countries were on the list and others were not. And so for not a perspective, but some more information about how that or what is going on there, another program that I listen to is the ACLJ, American Center for Law and Justice. Mm-hmm. And they will give you the legal aspects of what is actually going on and what is constitutional and what is not constitutional. So they mm-hmm. have a great and enormous amount of information that clarifies a lot of these questions that are being asked. So that prompted my call today because I was listening to that call. So that would be the ACLJ.org. And you can also see them on Facebook, too. Mm-hmm. So I enjoy your program, and I enjoy their program on my way home from work. So I kind of flip back and forth, so I happen to catch her. So I just wanted to share that information.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you, Ken, very much. Yeah, let's separate fact from fiction. If you want to agree or disagree, let's just do it based on facts. I have no problem with people saying I have issue with the president's executive order for XYZ reasons, as long as they understand what the order's about. Or I agree with it for XYZ reasons. Again, as long as they understand what it's actually about. Hey, thank you for the call and for listening. Of course, Jay Sekulow, ACLJ, a good friend, another Jewish believer in Jesus. Hey, before I go to the phones, have you downloaded our app since I announced it a half hour ago? You said, well, I didn't have a chance. I just want to remind you, the Ask Dr. Brown app is at long last available on Android phones and Apple coming any day. Ask Dr. Brown. So just go to the Google Play Store, the Android Play Store on your phone, and download the app on your tablet. Ask Dr. Brown, A-S-K-D-R Brown. So here, right on your phone, just click on articles and you'll see my last 20 or 30 articles listed. And then if you want to archive the rest, boom, click on that. It'll take you to our website. Go there. You'll see last 20, 30 videos just right there. Boom. Watch them on your phone. You want to watch more? Just click and it'll take you to our page, to our related webpage. You want to find out about what we're doing in Jewish outreach or ministry? You want to check out our resources? You want to donate to the ministry? You want to listen to the Line of Fire? Just click on that. You want to call? Boom. Just press the button to call. All there right on your cell phone. So whether I'm on your radio station or not, whether you get the first half hour or the whole 2 hours, you can always listen live anywhere in the country, just right on your cell phone or tablet. How cool is that? Ask Dr. Brown, A-S-K-D-R Brown. Download the app today. All right, we go back to Virginia. Teresa is not there. Okay. This gives me a couple more minutes. This gives me a couple more minutes to weigh in on a few things. In my article, which you can read at AskDrBrown.org, I talk about five things bothering me about the response to Trump's executive order on refugees. Five things. One is the less outrage. It seems to be driven, the outrage over this executive order, it seems to me to be driven more by hatred toward Trump than by love for Muslim refugees. Unless suddenly all America, or vast numbers of Americans around the country, got concerned about Libyan and Yemeni refugees. I'm not minimizing their plight for a split second, God forbid. But it's the sudden outrage. It seems suspicious to me. And then second, there's the hypocrisy. What about slaughtered Christians in the Middle East? I tweeted out Saturday night, where are all the protests across America as millions of Christians overseas are being slaughtered or sold into slavery or exiled? Why the outrage over the executive order, but virtually no outrage over the slaughter of Christians in the Middle East? Genocide. Genocide. And then three, there's nothing wrong with prioritizing help for our Christian brethren. People object to it. Christians object to it. It's wrong. One gay pastor told me on Twitter, it's tribalism. No. As Christians, these are the ultimate least of these, my brethren, Jesus spoke of in Matthew 25. Galatians 6:10 urges us to do good for all, especially for those of the household of faith. All right? And then legally, this is, it's not Islamophobia. The executive order says that we are to prioritize refugee claims made by individuals on the basis of religious-based persecution, provided that the religion of the individual is a minority religion in the individual's country of nationality. So this could apply to groups like the Yazidis in Iraq as well. And then fourth, there's no Muslim ban. There is not a Muslim ban. It is being misreported. There is no Muslim ban. Okay? And there are the way the media is reporting it to me is irresponsible. To me, could cause further problems because it is exacerbating the issue greatly. Okay, and then fifth, evangelicals need to stop defending everything Donald Trump does as if you have a sacred obligation to because you voted for him. Maybe you voted for President Obama, but differed with something he did. You don't have to defend it. If you're a black Christian and you voted for Obama to be president, you were proud to have a black leader in the White House, you still can differ with him. So maybe you're an evangelical who voted for Trump. Now, I'm not saying you should or shouldn't differ with him over the executive order, but for some who think automatically you have to defend Trump, why? Based on what? All right, remember, download the app, AskDrBrown.org. My bottom line today, this is a time for civility and clarity and respect in our interaction, not for a lot of hotheads. Man, the whole nation is shaking and quaking over this Donald Trump's executive order on the refugees. We'll sort it out today.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thank you so much for being part of our broadcast today. This is Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. I'm broadcasting from Cary, North Carolina. I've been here since Saturday night. We had two great meetings at the Cary Church of God yesterday, Sunday morning and Sunday evening. And I'm here this whole week, Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night. So all of you listening on 1030 AM or 105.7 FM in the greater Raleigh area, join me. We'll be having some great services with the focus on revival and fresh, life-changing encounters with God. I'd love to see you. It was great to meet a number of you last night where we had a great time together. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. We just had an hour of very lively conversation, different perspectives on the president's executive order. We must sort out the truth from some media reporting. We also must sort out the poor implementation, the initial implementation of the executive order from the actual contents of the executive order. That's something else that we need to do. And we must separate the issue of a temporary ban from a permanent ban. And the question of extreme vetting, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Is that a necessary thing? Lots of things to talk through. One of our callers last hour said he grew up living near Donald Trump and feels like a lifelong friend of his. And of course, what Trump did is right. And he made clear he's a born-again Christian and he hates Muslims. He hates Muslims. And he's 9/11 and how they've taken over in certain communities and this and that. Is that Christian to hate Muslims? And how can we separate a temporary ban on Muslims from seven or from citizens from seven countries from that from the notion of a Muslim ban, which this is not? Now, here's something interesting. I'm going to take a lot of calls. So 866-348-7884. Daniel Greenfield, writing on frontpagemag.com, has an article, Three Questions to Keep Muslim Terrorists Out of America, How to Screen Muslim Immigrants for Muslim Terror. And he points out that the 9/11 hijackers, when they were getting non-immigrant visas to our country, they are asked, are you a member or representative of a terrorist organization? They checked the box that said no, and they were in. The current incarnation of the form asks the same perfunctory and generic question. An actual terrorist is as likely to check the box as he is to finger a rosary while eating a ham sandwich and singing Hava Nagila. So in other words, Catholic Association, eating ham, which a Muslim wouldn't do, and singing a Jewish song. But, he continues, since 9/11, the terrorist threat has evolved from foreign cells penetrating this country to domestic Islamic terrorists emerging out of Muslim settlements already occupying this country. So we need to do a better job of vetting. Now, I'm sure there were more questions that were asked other than, are you a member or representative of a terrorist organization? Yes, I am. Yes, I'm here to destroy your country. Let me in. Now, obviously, there is more to it. There's more to it. However, can we do a better job? Greenfield says our current screening methods are laughably crude. The immigrant visa form asks about engaging in and funding terrorism, does not, however, specify what a terrorist group is. It goes on and on. So he suggests three questions that would help us do a better job of vetting. Have you ever had any associations with the Muslim Brotherhood or any of its front groups? Will you commit to avoiding associations with Brotherhood Mosque and other entities in the country? Are you aware you'll be deported if you do not? Maybe deported. Do you disavow the following verses of the Quran calling for violence against non-Muslims? Some interesting questions. We'll be right back.
It's fire we want, for fire we please. Stand in the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
There is a video we just posted on Facebook. I haven't been able to watch it yet. One of my colleagues sent it to me, and I want to get some discussion going on it, so we posted it on the Ask Dr. Brown Facebook page. This is Michael Brown. It's my joy to be with you on The Line of Fire as we sort through issues surrounding the president's executive order on refugees. But we have numerous families serving in the Middle East as missionaries, serving in the Muslim world, serving in Israel, and many of them have been there for years and have a great love for Middle Eastern people. Some speak Arabic now, have a great love for their Muslim neighbors. And these are grads, grad and his family, serving in the Middle East, fine people with a great heart for the Lord. And on the video, say this: it's the purpose and responsibility of the church to demonstrate God. God's given us the privilege of demonstrating the love of Christ in the Middle East. He's given you the exact same opportunity in your town. If the only response that the Muslim people see here is from social media, it will be a missed opportunity. Use this opportunity to love your Muslim neighbor. Let your discontentment with this order push you to love your Muslim neighbor. Don't miss this opportunity to be Jesus to the families of the Middle East. Of course, we absolutely love the heart of our missionaries and their heart to reach out to all with love. Does this executive order stand in the way of that? What do you think? Does this executive order stand in the way of loving your Muslim neighbor? Is this a greater opportunity to love your Muslim neighbor? 866-348-7884. Do you think that we need a better vetting process? Again, let's separate fact from fiction. This is not an order affecting Muslims worldwide. This is an order affecting refugees from seven Middle Eastern countries, including Libya, Iraq, Sudan, Somalia, Yemen, those countries, which the previous administration also identified as terror-promoting countries or hotbeds of terrorism. So the president said, let's take 90 days to get our vetting process in better order, to make sure that we do our best to keep people out, because thus far we've not done the best job. Now, I don't have details on this, but it is my understanding that we let quite a few radicals come into our country under the Obama administration with the purpose of tracking them. In other words, our whole purpose was to use them for intel, that if we thought that they could potentially be radicalized or radical in their thinking or given to terrorism, that we'll let them come in our country and we will follow them carefully and use them for intelligence purposes so that we can actually see, okay, what are they doing? We could actually see who are they associating with? What mosques are they going to? What other groups are they working with? What's their chatter sound like? So that if something is coming, we will find out about it. All right, whether it's a good strategy or not, wise strategy or not, that can be debated. I'm sure it's been done in different ways, and other countries may do similar things. They know this person is a potential threat, so they keep their eyes on them, and they use them for their own undercover purposes without the person knowing it. But as I understand it, we let a number of such people come in. Off the top of my head, I don't know the number, so to say a number, whether that number was 10 or 5,000, I don't know off the top of my head. And again, I've never verified the details, but I've read enough reports that seem to be reliable in this. And then partway through, while they were here, a decision was made by our administration that it was wrong to be tracking them. So we lost sight of them. In other words, we didn't try to find them, but we lost sight of them, which makes our policy that we had initially completely foolish. So do we need to be careful to not send out a wrong message to the world? We have to be careful. And in that sense, I believe the media is doing us a real disservice. I believe the media is doing us a terrible disservice. I believe that they are inflaming passions. I believe that their hostility towards Donald Trump has gotten the better of them, and that they are not reporting accurately, let alone sympathetically, and trying to take the worst example of an abuse of this or a problem in its implementation and make this out to be some kind of Muslim ban. I find that downright irresponsible. At the same time, we have to be careful as Americans that we do not develop sentiments and attitudes which are wrong and sinful. Now, let me address a few things about Islam. And let me reply to just some comments posted for me by our folks on our own radio team here. When I studied classical Arabic for 3 years in college and grad school, some of the time I was studying side by side with Muslims, devoted Muslims, from America, from Sudan, from other countries. We have dear friends who have labored in the Muslim world for many, many years. And we have grads from our ministry school serving right at this moment in the Muslim world. And one of our spiritual sons, a grad from our ministry school, was martyred by Al-Qaeda terrorists a few years back. We've never been allowed to give more details on it, what country it took place and how it happened, because we still had people in that country, and there were other Christians reaching out there, so we could not mention it. But we buried one of our sons. I mean, his body, after great effort, was shipped back to the States, and we were there at the funeral to participate in his burial. And what have our missionaries done, those that were part of the team where he was martyred? Well, his wife came back to the States with her boys, continued to have a great love for the Muslim world, and years later remarried, which was so glad to see. And her husband that was martyred would have been glad to see. In fact, they actually had the conversation because they knew they could be martyred. They had the conversation. He brought it up. What if I was martyred? Would you remarry? I want you to remarry. I mean, think of that. So what have our grads done? They've gone back to the Middle East. They've gone back to reach Muslims. They're giving their lives to reach Muslims, and they have many dear friends, fine people, men and women, who are Muslim, that are caring. In fact, after our missionary there was martyred, and he was just there serving in the community, teaching and serving in a way that was perfectly legal, and then just getting to know people and then sharing the gospel with them. The day after he was martyred, Muslims in his community, women wearing burqas, Muslim men, they marched down the streets protesting, saying this is not Islam, saying Al-Qaeda is not Islam. And they marched down the streets. They held up pictures of this young man. They wore headbands that said, "We love him," with his name. Okay, I saw the video. We sat and wept as we watched it. I've studied Islam for years, and I've had friends on the air who have worked with Muslims or lived in the Muslim world for decades to discuss these issues. And that's why I use the term radical Islam. Radical Islam is a valid expression of Islam. It is the minority. It represents maybe 10 to 15% of Muslims worldwide, but it is a legitimate expression of Islam based on Quranic and Quranic sources and sources in Hadith and in Islamic history, with many Islamic clerics sanctioning it to this day. And it is murderous, and it is destructive, and it is violent, and it needs to be called out. So I'll do what I've always done. I will sound the alarm about radical Islam, and I will make clear that the vast majority of Muslims worldwide are not radical. Not only so, that if we go a little further, probably the majority of Muslims in America are more nominal. They're not as religious. For example, a good way to judge the religiosity of your Muslim friends is ask, do the men pray five times a day? Just ask that question. Do the men pray five times a day? do they, at the appointed prayer times, wherever they are, pull out their prayer mat and pray five times a day? You say, yeah, I don't know. Then they don't. If you don't know, then they don't. In other words, if you live around them and you don't know, then they don't, because you would know. You would know. And they'd be at the mosque for communal prayer and things like that. That would just be a given. And, of course, they'd fast during the month of Ramadan. No food or liquid of any kind from sunrise to sunset every day. Then they'd be feasting at night. This would just be the norm for them. The women would also be covered on a certain level. If they're just walking down the street wearing, you know, tight jeans and a low-cut shirt, and they say they're Muslim, they're nominal. It's very different from a devoted Muslim. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for being part of the broadcast, 866-348-7884. Look, I get criticized on both sides of this issue for using the term radical Islam. I get criticized by those who say it's not Islam. Well, it is. It is an expression of Islam. Remember, Muhammad was first a religious leader, then a political leader, then a warrior. All right? And there are enough instances from his life, from the Hadith, that speak of violent acts that have been then the paradigm, the template for Muslims in subsequent generations. Remember, our leader, our savior, was crucified, laid down his life. The leader of the Muslim religion, Muhammad, who's not considered God, of course, but the leader of the Muslim religion, was a violent warrior. So again, you're going to have a different expression and mentality in the faith. When you have a Christian majority country, Muslims are not suffering the way Muslims suffer the way Christians suffer in a Muslim majority country, unless it's a very liberal Islamic country like Indonesia. But again, you're not going to compare Indonesia, say, to Iran in terms of Islamic practice there. So I get criticized for calling it radical Islam. Some say it's not Islam at all. That's on the one side. On the other side, I get criticized by people who say, no, all Islam is radical. Don't call it radical Islam. All Islam is murderous. All Islam is radical. That's simply not true. It hasn't been true over the centuries, and it's certainly not true today. But let's not minimize the reality of the massive amount of bloodshed that has taken place in the name of Islam. You say, yeah, well, what about the Crusades and Inquisition? These are complete aberrations in church history. And you don't, here, from the time of Jesus until the Crusades is 1,000 years. This is not the pattern of the church as it expanded to go around killing people. And the Crusades, as much as horrific things were done in the name of Christ, the Crusades still were largely aimed at taking back territory that Islam had taken over in the Middle East, etc. Of course, horrific things were done. But let's understand that this is not the norm, and you cannot be quoting the words of Jesus in support of Crusades. But I'm talking about the Crusades like the Middle Age Crusades. You can't be quoting the words of Jesus to support those murderous acts where they were murderous. But you can quote the Quran to support things like kill the infidel wherever you find them. You say, well, what's the context? That, of course, is what's debated. What's the context and how does it apply? I'm going to go to your calls in a moment, but think of the book of Joshua. The book of Joshua called for the killing of the Canaanites, right? Called for the killing of the Canaanites. And you say, well, that we should kill our unsaved neighbors. You know, my neighbor next door is into witchcraft. And my other neighbor uses a Ouija board and consults with spirits. Should I kill them? No, love them. Have them over for a meal. Share the gospel with them. So you say, yeah, but the Israelites were called to kill the Canaanites. Yeah, this was a one-time thing in a specific situation for specific reasons because of specific wickedness, not something to be repeated over and over and over again. In the Quran, you do not have it clearly delineated that this was just for a certain time. So you have certain verses that have a peaceful approach and others that have a warring approach. Which ones prevail? And one rule is the later ones prevail. Well, then the later ones would be warring ones. These are realities. Either way, putting all of that aside, the fact is that the executive order from the president was not a Muslim ban. Did Donald Trump want to enact a Muslim ban and was talked out of it? I don't know. I wasn't there. Did he enact a Muslim ban? No. So feel free to differ with the executive order, take issue. Just understand what it's about. All right? 866-34-TRUTH. We go to Diane. I was going to go to Diane in Charlotte. 866-348-7884 is the number to call. Yes, someone just sent me this article. Rudy Giuliani gleefully admits Trump sought legal way to enact Muslim ban. Donald Trump has been pretty grumpy that his executive order barring immigration from seven Muslim-majority nations has been accurately called a Muslim ban. He's so mad that maybe he should direct some of his anger at his own minister of cybering, Rudy Giuliani, who gleefully let the Muslim ban cat slip out of the racist bag this weekend during an interview with Jeanine Pirro on Fox News. Quote, I'll tell you the whole history of it. When he first announced it, he said Muslim ban. He called me up and said, put a commissioner together. Show me the right way to do it legally. I put a commission together with Judge McCoskey, with Congressman McCall, Pete King, a whole group of other very experts on this law, on this. And what we did was we focused on, instead of religion, danger, the areas of the world that create danger for us, which is a factual basis, not a religious basis, perfectly legal, perfectly sensible. And that's what the ban is based on. So what was Donald Trump's intent? Was it a Muslim ban? Was it just that he said it unclearly? Don't know. We got Rudy Giuliani's word. Either way, the executive order is not a ban. It is a temporary halt. It does not affect over 40 other Muslim majority countries. It calls for 120 days while we can get our vetting processes in order. And then it does want to give priority to religious minorities that are persecuted within a country. So those would be the ultimate people needing refugee status. So where's the Muslim ban? Again, I think a lot of the reaction to this is hatred towards Donald Trump more than concern about Libyan and Somali refugees. I honestly feel that way. And one reason that I feel that way is because there was almost no outcry across our nation, and has been no outcry, as hundreds of thousands of Christians in the Middle East have been displaced, have been executed, have been sold into slavery, have been tortured, have been brutalized, and yet this executive order is passed and there's outrage across the country. Something's not lining up here correctly. Now, got a question for you. If you could just have, right on your cell phone, I'm holding my cell phone now, and I'm clicking on this, clicking on the Ask Dr. Brown app. What if you could have on your cell phone, I want to tune in and listen. I'm away from my radio now, or I'm out of my normal area where I can pick up his show. Oh, just click on the Line of Fire and listen. 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you want to call them, boom, just click the call number. How about this? I haven't seen his articles lately. I'm looking for Mike Brown's articles. Okay. Just click on articles on the Ask Dr. Brown app, and there you have a list of maybe my last 20 or so, and then view more items. Just click to see the rest. Or, has he put out any new videos? I'm not sure. All right. I'm looking at it. There they are, full color. Here are the videos. How to Pray for President Trump, my most recent one. James and Betty Robinson talk with Dr. Brown about breaking the stronghold of food. What is the blasphemy of the spirit? When Muslim feminists accuse Trump of misogyny. Who are the Nephilim? These are all some of my latest videos. So just get the app, and right on your phone, you want to see the rest of the videos, just click, view more items, and boom, there you go. Now, it's not available on Apple phones yet, but that will be any day now. On all your Android phones. We've got a break now. We got a 1 minute break. Take out your cell phone, take out your tablet, download the Ask Dr. Brown app, ASKDR Brown. Download the app and join us on the app community today.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yes, someone who doesn't know me just said, shame on you for voting for Donald Trump. So, if with care and prayer and some reservations, I voted for Donald Trump to be our president, shame on me. Maybe shame on people for not doing their research a little better before they put out their opinions. Hey, welcome to the Line of Fire. Michael Brown, delighted to be here with you. We have been talking for the last 90 minutes about the president's executive order, trying to separate fact from fiction, trying to see what was poor implementation versus a poor executive order, and talking about whether it was a good thing to do or not. What's your take? 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Good thing or a bad thing? Necessary or unnecessary? Will the executive order provoke Muslims in our country to become more radicalized, and could it lead to more terrorism rather than less? Is that a possibility? What about this? What if it's the media's reporting on the executive order that could lead to more terrorism and hostility right here in America? What if the media's misreporting is making things look even uglier than they might be, therefore leading to some type of ugly response? Is that a possibility? I think that's certainly a concern. I see a lot of irresponsibility in the media's reporting, which at times has bordered on or crossed the line into hysteria. Now, here's another question to sort out. Let's look at the Torah. Let's look at the five books of Moses, all right? Let's look there and see all of the verses that talk about the stranger, the refugee. One of my friends called me today, Jewish believing friend. He said, Mike, there's a synagogue, and they're criticizing Donald Trump. Yeah, maybe a synagogue in his area. They're criticizing Donald Trump and the executive order, saying that the Torah requires us to care for the refugees. The Torah requires us to care for the alien. Okay, I agree. We should. The Torah also required Israel to kill the hostile alien. So in other words, if you're going to use the Torah, use it consistently. Yes, if someone wanted to take shelter under the wings of the people of Israel and the God of Israel, like Ruth from Moabite, and wanted to be part of the community, then they would have to live by many of the laws that the Israelites would live by. Okay, you're going to be part of our community. You live by our laws, and you worship our God, and you can live among us. That's fine. But if they were going to bring idolatry into the nation, they would have been killed. And if they were one of the surrounding nations that was considered a threat to Israel, Israel would have been at war with them. So I absolutely believe we need to carefully heed the Torah ethic on caring for refugees. And it's a high and lofty ethic. And in many ways, over the centuries of our nation's existence, the 200 plus years of our existence, we have built our nation on immigrants coming in and becoming part of us. And I think Americans do have open hearts to those that are in need around the world, saying, hey, if we can help, we want to help. I don't think we often express it as well as we could, but just think of all the money. Just think of all the money that American Christians give to help people around the world, to help dig wells in certain places where there's no irrigation and people are dying of thirst and starvation, to help with those in need. We are giving people worldwide. That doesn't mean that we don't use wisdom against potential terrorists. What do you think? 866-34-TRUTH.
Sing it, Lord.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for being part of the Line of Fire broadcast. 866-348-7884 is the number to call. Hey, should the government's greatest emphasis be security or compassion? Or is it maybe not an either-or question? Should the government's greatest emphasis be security or compassion? Or should security be the government's emphasis and compassion the church's emphasis? Let me ask this. When a judge is sitting behind his bench and he is going to decide on a case, what do you want from that judge? It's a murder case. It's a rape case. It's a theft case. It's an extortion case. It's something else where the person has been convicted of crimes. What do you want that judge to do? What are you looking for? If you could sum it up in one word, what are you looking for? Would justice be that word? I would hope so. That we're looking for justice. We don't want the judge to overreact and do something frenzied and crazy and pull out a gun and shoot the person. Look, what you've done is a horror. No, God forbid. On the other hand, we don't want the judge to be moved primarily by compassion and not justice. So that if someone has committed a serious crime, maybe they raped and murdered an old woman or some horrific thing like that, simply because they were trying to steal money for drugs and found the woman at home. You don't want to say, you know, I know you had a tough life, and I understand that you were abused when you were a kid, and you were just raised by several people who called them your parents but never really cared for you. Yeah, those are all issues, and those are all valid things to talk about when you're evaluating someone's life and trying to minister to them and help them. But what the judge needs to see is, not, okay, you've had a hard life, so tell you what, just don't do it again and have a nice day. No, that there's no justice then. There is no justice for that family that lost that person. And there is no safety for the society with that person being out on the streets who might just go do it again, especially when the judge just felt sorry for them. So what you want is justice from the judge. What you want Homeland Security to do is make our borders secure. Now, look, I travel into enough countries. And I go into England and I'm going to be ministering there. They want to ask all kinds of questions. And am I going to be making any money? And is it personal? No. And, okay, where's the money? Okay, what am I doing? And, you know, things like that. And that's understandable. They have a country to run and they don't want Americans coming in and taking British money out without accountability. It's fine. Makes sense. When I go to Canada, I get grilled going into Canada for a few days of ministry. What are you doing? Why? And back. And that's their job. They make you uncomfortable when you go to border control. I'm an American going to Canada to preach for a few days and coming in and out of Mexico. I've been at border crossing, say, going into Juarez from El Paso. And at the border crossing sometimes go, you know, I mean, you could wait for an hour or 2 hours to get through if you're there at the wrong time of the day, probably worse at other times. I've waited long times at the Canadian border. I mean, these just borders, and for the most part, it's just people that live in each country going back and forth on a regular basis. So I've got no problem with us improving our vetting process from people from certain nations. I have no problem with that. I think it's wise that we do that. I have a problem with the hysterical reaction to the president's executive order as if it was, in fact, a ban of all Muslims coming into the country, which, to repeat, it's not. As if it was, in fact, an exclusively or primarily religious test, which it's not. Was it implemented poorly? Was there lack of understanding of the implications of this? Are there still some ripples and wrinkles to be worked out. It appears so. It appears so. But I want to say this again. I've said it throughout the show. I personally believe that a lot of the reaction against this executive order is a reaction primarily against Donald Trump and not primarily against the order itself. That people voted for him based on the fact he said he was going to do these things. He's now implementing them. And it's not as extreme as what he campaigned on. When he talked about a ban of all Muslims, that was extreme. And that would keep many fine people from entering our country that have every reason to be here. And that could even make America a better country in the years ahead. So this is a step back from what he campaigned on and something that makes sense. Would I have done it if I was the president? No one in the world knows. How could you know? We don't know all the information that you get as the president and all the intel and all the other stuff you get and dealing with other nations. I don't know. But the reaction goes way beyond the order itself. 866-348-7884. Talking about errors. All right, here's a conservative website, townhall.com. My articles appear there as well. Here's Katie Pavlich, and she's a regular writer there. Is it Katie's article here? No, hang on. Let me just see. But an article on Town Hall saying how not to roll out an executive order. So there are things that could have been done better. But yeah, it is fake news to call it a Muslim ban. It is. Why is it being repeated over and over? Why are Christians repeating it? Look, I've said before, I'll say it again. You don't need to defend every single thing that the president does if you voted for him. You might have profound differences with things he does. That's fine. I wrote an article on five things bothering me about the response to Donald Trump's executive order. Five things that are bothering me. And the last one, the first one was the level of outrage against this. I don't think it's all sincere that everybody's just concerned about Libyan and Somalian refugees. I think it's a reaction against Trump. And then the hypocrisy of it, the outrage over this, but almost no outrage over the literal genocide of Middle Eastern Christians. And then three, there's nothing wrong with prioritizing help for our Christian brethren, even though Christian organizations say we shouldn't do this. And then four, there's no Muslim ban. The media is being irresponsible. And five, as evangelicals, we need to stop blindly defending whatever Donald Trump says and does. In other words, To be faithful to him, if you voted for him, to be faithful to him, if you feel he does something wrong, pray for him all the more, and then let it be known that you differ. You know, write to your representative or, you know, communicate or tweet out that you differ. That's perfectly fine. That is being loyal, not by standing with and sanctioning everything a person does, okay? Now, you may totally agree with this executive order. That's fine. All I'm saying is we need to respond righteously with our heads screwed on right, not based on the way the media is reporting everything. Fair enough? All right, let's go to Andrea in Dallas, Texas. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you. I just wanted to just give my 2 cents worth. Everybody I know is supportive of what Trump is doing. And I just think that all those protesters do not speak for the majority of people. And I'm not sure how Trump would even find out, but I just want him to know that the majority of the people love him and are supportive of him. It's just those few leftists, I guess, that are opposing it. And they're, I guess, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. But the majority of people I know are very supportive of him and what he's doing. It's nice to have a president who actually does care about our welfare, and we applaud him. So I just wanted to put that in.
Yeah, Andrew, most of the calls I got in the first hour of the broadcast said that as well. And again, it's the misreporting of them by the media is fueling fires. And then I can't verify this because I haven't looked into the sources, but reliable sources indicate that the Council of American Islamic Relations CARE, which many consider to have terrorist ties, that they have sponsored some of the protests. From what I've read, it seems pretty accurate. Again, I just haven't been able to dig into it more deeply. So in other words, it's not all just spontaneously happening. And then once the thing starts to happen, of course, a crowd draws a crowd, and excitement draws more excitement, and then the press and the media are covering it. So I think if it was covered accurately, if there was not just a gut-level reaction to everything President Trump does, and if we pulled out some of the Islamic sponsoring of the protests, if in fact that's accurate, then you'd have much, 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 much less outrage going on. Hey, thank you for calling, Andrew. Your voice is certainly heard.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I just don't understand this. Looking at an article in Politico.com, a broad coalition of Christian leaders and evangelical groups spoke out against President Donald Trump's move to rein in immigration from certain majority Muslim nations, an outcry that risks undercutting the White House's case for an executive order under siege from protesters and Democrats. And the article is headed, Christian groups oppose Trump's preference for Christian refugees. I don't get that. Of course, as a Christian majority nation, if we can help Christian refugees, we ought to, especially because they can't go to other Muslim nations. They're going to have a harder time there, and they're suffering genocide in the Middle East. But why wouldn't we do that? 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to William in Greensboro, North Carolina. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Brown. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Just wanted to say I agree with what you said earlier. I do believe that the outrage is really more towards Trump than anything, because, I mean, Trump really is the PC police's worst nightmare. Because he is actually trying to do things. He stands up to what he's saying, and he tries to go for it. But I just think personally, if he's actually trying to pass an order that would protect some terrorist attacks from happening, especially when at least 9 out of 10 of the last attacks that's happened has been claimed responsibility of ISIS and Islamic groups. I really don't see what the uproar is when we're really trying to protect innocent people from having anything else happening to them, regardless of their religious backgrounds or anything of that nature.
Yeah, I mean, look, bottom line is the government is responsible for our security. And while we want to have compassion on those in need and taking refugees, which we do by the tens of thousands every year, to reevaluate our policy and to look at what we're doing and how we're doing it and to just take a time out to do it. Yeah, the way things were executed and rolled out, that further exacerbated the problem. But is this so extreme? I don't think so. But I do understand why people are concerned, especially because of the way the media is reporting things and the way Donald Trump has handled himself, conducted himself in certain ways. I understand it brings further hostility. But I'm basically with what you're saying, William. Yeah. 866-34-TRUTH. We go to Maria in Irving, Texas. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi. I'm calling with regards to how people feel about this executive issue. I'm a conservative Christian. I know many other conservative Christians. And one of our issues with this executive order is that it doesn't seem to exactly be targeting refugees. It's targeting people with green cards in the United States, people with student visas. And to us, that just doesn't make any sense. These are people who have already been
vetted. No, it shouldn't have happened. The green card thing, the visa, the clarification was put out immediately. That's why the thing was messed up the way it was put out. There was lack of clarity. Mm-hmm. That people with green cards, some were stopped, but that was incorrect. People with legitimate visas, I think I read about, I haven't checked the accuracy, but I read about a newborn and an 18-month-old that were stopped, babies that were stopped in O'Hare Airport in Chicago. They were temporarily detained. So
yeah, and that's that's something that's really bothering people. And another thing, and this is
fully understood.
Yeah, there are, for example, the United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia, the countries of origin of the terrorists from the 9/11 attacks, are not on that ban list. And Saudi Arabia is a financial supporter of Wahhabi Islam, which is the backer of several jihadist groups. And we're just wondering, like, why not go after this target source? We understand Saudi Arabia has a lot of money. We've got a lot of business ties, but we have to be very serious. What's more important, targeting terrorist groups and the people who support them, or protecting lines of oil?
Yeah, that's a question that came up a little earlier in the broadcast, and I mentioned Saudi Arabia as well. Of course, the 9/11 terrorists were Saudis. Osama bin Laden hails from Saudi Arabia. Oh, the family there does. And President Bush had close ties with the Saudi royal family. Does that affect things?
Quite a few leaders have had ties with Saudi Arabia, and it's astounding that they are still leaning towards extremism despite having such strong ties with the West.
Wahhabi Islam absolutely hails from there. It is a country, for example, where adulterers are beheaded, where women are not allowed to drive under Islam there.
Western women have been beaten in Saudi Arabia for being raped.
It's your fault. So there are a lot of issues there. And is it simply the oil money? Look, I don't know that President Obama had close ties to the royal family, but President Bush certainly had. And yet the policies towards Saudi Arabia, American policies remain the same. Look, our American troops there in Saudi Arabia have to be very careful with what they say and do. Or, you know, you bring a Bible into Saudi Arabia, there can be issues. So, and there's the penalty for conversion from Islam is death. So, yeah, is it simply the oil money? Is it that they are not as hostile to Israel? I mean, look, we arm them as well. And now the latest thing I've seen is that I haven't been able to research it further, that there's discussion with our administration and Saudi Arabia on having safe spaces there for refugees, which they say they're open to. They claim that they took in, as of November of 2015, when I'd written about this, Saudi Arabia said they had taken in 2.5 million Syrian refugees. There are other surrounding Muslim nations that apparently taken in none. But these are very fair concerns to raise about, certainly there's no question about Libya and Yemen and these countries being hotbeds for terrorism. No question. But what about Saudi Arabia? Do we treat them differently because of the oil? We've got to ask the questions.
Exactly. And then just one final point that I do want to make is that I was reading a report, and I don't know if this has been corrected or changed or if this is incorrect in the first place, but I have read reports of Christians who are trying to enter the country. I heard about a family from Damascus that was sent back to Damascus in Syria, and that's another thing that I'm concerned about. I feel like this complete shutdown has affected people with green cards, has affected people with visas. It was not effectively done, and I do feel that it's not addressing issues.
Yeah, and I'm just jumping in because I'm out of time, Maria, but again, to reiterate what I've said, just about everybody said, like it or not, it wasn't rolled out well. It was not rolled out correctly and wisely. And because of that, people with green cards were stopped. And were Christians sent back? I don't know. Basically, there's a general halt on refugees from Syria, period. But there is a desire to prioritize those who are a religious minority within their country. And Donald Trump has said about the Syrian Christians being treated terribly. He's actually brought that up. Thankfully, he has actually brought that up, that the Christians in the Middle East are suffering the worst of all. So should we try to help them just on pure refugee status? Yes, let alone being majority Christian, it makes sense if we can. Hey, Maria, thank you for raising these points. These are all issues we need to focus on and discuss. Remember to download on your Android phones the Ask Dr. Brown app, A-S-K-D-R Brown app. And bottom line, let us rise above the fray.